This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
I'm Philippe Cousteau from Earth Echo International, and you're listening to Out of the Blue, 855 AM, 3CR's Marine and Ocean News program.
Good morning and welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday 22nd of February 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcast, and you will also find a number of episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook. That's all the W's, facebook.com/ Out of the Blue Radio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also to future generations. My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and today's weather, we've got a bit of everything on the way to Melbourne today, and it's a classic case of why I'm always telling our listeners to please take care if you're getting into our beautiful bay or waterways in the state of Victoria, or indeed from wherever you may be listening. So the top temperature today, we're headed for a cloudy top of 30 degrees. There's a very high chance of showers. As I can tell you, there's also a few drops of rain already falling in the western suburbs. Very sort of sparse rainfall at the moment, but it's going to get heavier later on. There's a reasonable chance that we'll get at least 10 mils of rain. High chance of showers most likely in the afternoon and evening, with the chance of thunderstorms. We've got winds coming from the north. The northerlies 15 to 25 kilometres an hour, tending north to northwesterly 25 to 35 kilometres an hour, so stiffening potentially during the morning, and then turning westerly 20 to 25 kilometres an hour during the evening. So back on Sunday the 8th of February, Marine Care Point Cook actually hosted the Jawbone Marine Sanctuary Care Group at Point Cook Marine Sanctuary, and there ended up being around 24 of us that got together and actually ended up heading out into the water and had a much appreciated barbecue later on. The morning was absolutely perfect, but after getting out of the water, we were greeted to this amazing sight of all these dorsal fins cutting up the sanctuary, a whole pod of dolphins, possibly Burrinans, making their way past the Marine Sanctuary. But shortly before we wrapped up for the day and started packing away the barbie, we were struck by how quickly the wind changed and the temperature plummeted. So it swung from a gentle northeasterly to this strong southwesterly. And that's a classic case of what can happen, and something that can make life very difficult for swimmers or those in boats or kayaks. And certainly pays to be aware of the weather forecast. Sometimes, you know, our enthusiasm gets the better of us. We head out into the water and it's, oh, what a beautiful morning, the winds are light, great, and we head out there, that's all well and good to enjoy it. But if you neglect to look at the forecast, you've really got no idea of what might be coming. And on this day, our beautiful marine sanctuary was transformed into the most idyllic looking, welcoming environment, into something that suddenly looked like a foreboding washing machine in a matter of minutes. Anyway, today I want to have a bit of a chat about a regular topic, it's got to be said, that comes up at this time of year. If it's summer in Australia, then there's always going to be the chance of human-shark interactions, and this year has certainly proven to be no different. So back with this, back with that discussion on the other side of this brief message.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows, and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet, or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our ways.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. I was reading an article from The Guardian during the week, an online article from The Guardian during the week, and some interesting stats were featured. So overall, there was an uptick in the number of people killed or bitten by sharks in unprovoked attacks globally for the 2025 year. So the International Shark Attack File, that's compiled by the Florida Program for Shark Research at the University of Florida, ended up recording 65 unprovoked attacks worldwide, up from 47 during 2024, and an increase on the five-year average of 61. Now, a couple of things there. Firstly, remember we're talking about recorded shark bites. So in that situation, of course, it's the ones that we know about. There could well be ones in the total, and I'm not suggesting it's too much higher, but where we're just not sure. If someone disappears, vanishes without a trace, we really don't have much information on what actually may have happened to them. There could be remains washing up on the beach and so on. It does not necessarily mean it goes down as a recorded shark bite or shark attack. So it is important to just bear that in the back of your mind. The increase on the five-year average from 61 to 65, I don't mean to sort of be blasé about this or reduce the importance of these sorts of events. And let's face it, when they do occur, they are quite horrifying in some unfortunate cases. But they are what you'd sort of refer to as soccer scores. An increase of four is what it is. What you've got to do is bear in the back of your mind the, I think a really useful stat is the drowning statistics. So in America, in the USA in 2025, I believe the number was somewhere up around 4,500 people. So we're talking about something that is orders of magnitude greater than the risk posed by shark bite. We are very good at getting into trouble in water. We don't necessarily need a shark to get us into trouble. However, one focus of today's broadcast is I will be talking about some of the things that you can do, some of the basic measures that you can undertake to protect yourself and your family and loved ones and friends and so on. So with the 2025 figures, and before I go on, in Australia, the number was 357 people drowned in Australia during 2025. So again, that puts it into perspective for us. 12 confirmed human fatalities from shark bites during the year, almost double the previous year's total of seven. So again, a jump of 7 to 12 doesn't mean sharks have suddenly got us on the menu and they're seeking us out. No, it certainly doesn't. If they did, it would be... it'd be very difficult to get into the water safely at all. And we know for a fact, with the millions and millions of beach visitations every single year in the country, we're talking about a minuscule fraction of the situations where there might be incidents. But having said that, you've got to sometimes look a bit past the stats and think, well, are there measures I can put in place to protect myself and to protect others? So, according to the article, almost double, according to the article, suggested that it might be increasing numbers of great white sharks at aggregation sites and beaches that are popular with surfers, especially in Australia. So, Australia accounted for 5 of those 12. Now, there was some interesting reading. I've got to do some homework on this. I've printed out a paper that I haven't had a chance to have a look at yet. I hope to do it during the coming week. But there was actually a 13th fatality, and that was actually in Israel at a place called Hadera, near Tel Aviv back in April of last year. And that's an area where they actually receive warm water discharge from a power plant. And that's something that's quite interesting, because when you start talking about warm water discharge, what that does is, and we've got an example very close to us here, actually, Newport is called the Warmies. That's the power station there that puts out warm water effluent. What that does is it can attract species that sometimes would not normally be there. Another great example is Hazelwood Pondage, where they used to mainstream aquaculture in Werribee, actually stocked it with barramundi, because the barramundi would never normally survive in such cold temperatures, but they did quite well in this situation because of the warm water discharge from the power station. So with that, you're getting species that perhaps normally wouldn't be there. But also the other effect it might have is just to ramp up that metabolism a little bit. Sharks are a fascinating creature. Some, like the great white, will have a countercurrent heat exchange system that basically means, yes, their temperature fluctuates with that of the surrounding environment, like a bony fish, like many species of bony fish. But they've got this system that enables them to get their temperature, their internal body temperature, hovering about 7 degrees Celsius warmer than the surrounding environment. So it could have the effect of just jacking up that metabolism a little bit. Of course, when the metabolism increases, then potentially the feeding response could too. But there was a man, unfortunately, who died after being bitten by two dusky sharks. And it actually went down in the record books as being a provoked attack, because these sharks were being fed regularly. I'm not sure if that was by the individual in question, but they certainly made a mess of him, and he was mauled quite badly and died from his injuries. In typical management speak these days, there is a little bit to unpack there. I sort of read that and thought, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that in a sense, because where do you draw the line with provocation? If you've got a scenario where someone's feeding the sharks and they get bitten, all right, is it provoked as such? What about if they're spearfishing? And what about if there's been heavy rain recently? And that's one thing that I want to focus the discussion on shortly. So in South Africa, a fisherman actually became the first recorded fatality from a dusky shark. Now, the duskies are a large coastal species, often confused for other types of shark. And that's the difficulty. We call them, technically, they're known as carcharinids. Now, that's the whaler shark or requiem shark family, sometimes referred to as ground sharks. The duskies, they're a species that grow to 3.5 metres or 10 feet long. And I've got to say, for many years when I was just a young fella looking at shark bites, they're kept on, there's this focus all the time around, you know, great whites, tigers, bulls, as there should be, because they're the ones that cause a lot of the heartache. They're the ones that tend to attack more people than any other shark species. Another one worthy of mention is the oceanic white tip. Most people, when they rank the sharks, they put those as the basically undisputed, in a sense, certainly the top three, but oceanic white tip creeps into the top four. And one that's avoided a lot of scrutiny has been the dusky, and I've always wondered about that, because you look at the teeth on these things, and it is very similar to the upper jaw teeth in particular, very similar to what you'd find in the mouth of a bull shark, an oceanic white tip. There's another one called a Java or pig eye shark, which tends to be a bit smaller, very similar sort of broad triangular upper jaw teeth, and the Galapagos shark is another one of those. Gets up to 12 feet long, recognised as being potentially very dangerous. Now, the potential is one thing, but then what actually occurs might be something quite different. So the duskies are renowned for being quite a shy species of shark. People over the years have observed a lot of these animals up close. Give you an example, the oceanic white tip. Scuba divers have said when they're in the water, the oceanic white tip's moving in its direction, it's going in its direction of propagation, cruising along. If you get in front of that shark, what the oceanic white tips are famous for is not moving. They play games of chicken, and sometimes that won't end well for the person. So they're a very bold sort of a shark. Not overly, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily say that's super aggressive, but they're like, no, you get out of the way. And they cruise straight through. The Duskies are total opposites to that. They tend to be very wary of humans and tend to move away. And it's fascinating, you know, when you hear people talk. I had the pleasure of 2024, my girlfriend and my family and I, we headed over to Africa and had an incredible time there. And I was just amazed to hear, you know, even lions and stuff. If you're walking along out there on the veld, you know, you're out there walking through the bush. The lions actually tend to take humans as being problematic. They tend to be quite anxious around them and tend to move out of the way. Now, that depends totally on the scenario. If it's a lone person and they're, you know, very unaware, then the lion's predatory instincts could certainly swing into calculations. And again, that hasn't wound up being a good scenario for many people over the journey. But still, I was amazed to hear that they tend to be very wary of the two-legged animals that are walking around out there in the bush. So yeah, it's very interesting. And the other thing I'd point out is that you have to treat everyone's experiences mean something. If they've observed a shark behaving in a certain way, that might be very different to what someone else's experience. You've got to respect those viewpoints. Interesting thing about the dusky shark is they are on the record, they're in the record books as having the most powerful, reliably measured bite pressure of any shark species. That's incredible. What they did was actually look at the pounds per square inch being exerted by the tip of the tooth and found it was extraordinarily high. That's probably going to be one of those areas that gets bolstered with more research as we go along. I wouldn't say it's absolutely definitive, but very interesting stuff anyway. The thing about the closer to home, our bronze whalers are a bit different. Duskies are found all over the place, by the way. They tend to be coastal inshore species, but they do range quite a bit into the offshore environment. So if you've got bull sharks that are close inshore, they're the ultimate example of the inshore species because they will wander up freshwater rivers and so on. The oceanic white tips tend to be out in a different niche. They're out way out in the deep blue sea with the blue sharks and all that sort of thing. And then in the intermediate range is probably the best way of considering the duskies. They hover in that sort of coastal surf zone right out into the deep blue sea, so tend to occupy that middle ground, if you like. One thing I've always wondered about with the shark species is the mako. They are a very large, powerful shark species, very closely related to the great white. They're a laminid, but having said that, they've got these very thin, non-serrated, slender teeth, and they're supremely designed, ultra sharp tips to the tooth. Perfect for grabbing fish species, you know, various fish species, grabbing the fish, orienting the fish in the mouth and basically swallowing them down whole, down the hatch. But the ones with the broadly serrated triangular teeth, the great whites, the tigers, the bull sharks, the oceanic white tips, and potentially now, as we've seen, with a couple of confirmed fatal bites, the duskies, they're the ones, as far as I'm concerned, that you really really need to look out for. If you've got an issue with dusky sharks, what do you do? Well, I can tell you one thing that you can't do if you want the animals to be around, and that's to cull them. The duskies are one of the slowest growing and latest maturing sharks, and they don't reach adulthood until around 20 years of age. So these are super vulnerable to human exploitation. Now, just a few other points. I've sort of never wondered why sharks feature so prominently in people's ideas around, the old adage that in the newspapers, if it bleeds, it leads. That is sort of a bit of a cynical point of view, but it's no doubt true. Now, that said, there is a real morbid fascination. I think the reason for that is, you know, if someone drowns, it's a terrible tragedy, but it is what it is. That and car accidents, they're more matters of physics. There isn't so much a situation where you find with a shark attack where the shark actually zeroes in on someone and potentially takes them out. We don't have much of that predatory influence these days. Of course, the predators we struggle with most are other human beings. But sadly, but yeah, the sharks sort of tap into that niche of our subconscious that nothing else really occupies much these days. Going on. As with the global figures, the most shark attacks recorded in Florida, there's not a whole hell of a lot that we can get out of that. Those tend to be largely relatively very harmless species that don't cause too many dramas. Anyway, what are some of the things that you can actually do in terms of limiting your exposure to sharks? And of course, the one of the main drivers for me talking about this today was that rash of four attacks that we had in only a 48-hour period in New South Wales, and that led to one man being suffering life-changing injuries. Actually, unfortunately, included the amputation of a limb. There was young 12-year-old Nico Antic, who sadly died, clung to life in hospital for a week after being bitten by a bull shark, and then there were two other attacks as well, one that sustained minor injuries and one, thankfully, the surfboard bore the brunt of the attack, and there was no physical injuries, which is a great thing. But what can you do? Certainly don't ignore the signs. If the beaches are closed, that's for a good reason. If the warning signs are in place, don't ignore them. Aggravating factor with these four bites in 48 hours is that there were heavy rains in the lead up. And when that happens, you're getting all these nutrients, bait fish and all this sort of stuff washing into the water, creates a real problem. And when that happens, you get all the food chain firing up. There's lots of algae out there. There's lots of zooplankton. There's all these bait fish coming in. The bait fish attract bigger fish, and then it goes so on and so forth up the line. And unfortunately, the heavy rains coincided with a time when the bull shark's metabolism was absolutely cranking. So some of the other recommendations coming from the experts: don't swim or surf at closed beaches or where warnings are in place, as I was saying. Avoid headlands. That's an interesting one that I hadn't thought of much, and I guess it's because of the increased runoff that's inherent at headlands. And likewise, river mouths near estuaries. If you've got a great big catchment, it's a great idea to wait at least 72 hours after heavy rains. The reason for that is the sheer size of the catchment, as I was saying, but also the lack of flushing. If you're out in the open ocean, you can probably get away with it after giving it 24 hours. Then all the stuff dissipates and gets diluted. There's the enormous flushing effect of the wide open sea. Port Phillip Bay probably sits in the middle of those, so you're looking at about 48 hours. And as much as anything, when you stay out of the water for a period of time after heavy rains, it's because of all the fecal coliforms, all the bacteria, all the crap that's getting washed into the water. That's more likely to cause any issues than certainly statistically than shark bite. You're looking at things like ear, nose, throat infections, eye infections, urinary tract infections, whatever. If you're swimming in a soup of gunk, then that's where you're going to have problems more than anything. All right, let's break things up a little bit here. I want to play an interesting song. As you do, I was mucking around on Facebook during the week, and I saw some wonderful drone footage. And they had a shot of a great white going through a school of bait fish, and of course the bait fish were doing what you'd expect them to do and getting the hell out of the way. But they accompanied it with an interesting bit of music, and it's called Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project. Now, when I play this one, basketball fans from the 1990s vintage, like myself, are going to get chills and have the hair standing up on the back of their necks. That was the music that Michael Jordan and the all-conquering Chicago Bulls used to run out to with the player introductions. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this one. This is Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project. We'll be right back.
Freedom of Species is a show about animals, for animals, listened to by humans. Tune in Sundays, 1 p.m.
Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 a.m. Okay, what are some of the other things that you can do to mitigate the risks of shark bite? And I think one of the major ones, of course, and this is pretty much for any walk of life, whether we're talking about shark bites, whether we're talking about traffic accidents, whether we're talking about, you know, assault with a deadly weapon, whatever the case may be, first aid. First aid is absolutely crucial. And it was only a few months back that I was giving a presentation, a briefing to the members of Marine Care Point Cook, and, you know, talking about some of the first aid techniques, the tying of tourniquets, you know, applying direct pressure to areas that might be bleeding. If you really want to get your head around that sort of stuff, I think it is a good idea to just expose yourself to some of the sites of the injuries that you could expect to see. If someone's got a relatively minor laceration to their arm, it's all well and good. If they've got most of their thigh ripped away from their leg, then that is a totally different kettle of fish, and that's something that you really need to be on top of, looking at it and working out, okay, how would we apply first aid in this hypothetical situation? As part of the presentation, I went through a whole bunch of different injuries, and it's got to be said, they're horrific. They do look horrific. They're mind-numbing is a description that I once read, mind-numbing injuries. But, you know, in many cases, the happy thing about the injuries that I was showing was that I purposely chose ones where the vast majority of people actually survive those injuries. So the application of first aid is absolutely crucial. So try to upskill in that area. We've got a bit of thinking to do in the next little while, myself and my girlfriend at some point in time, looking to head to Port Macquarie. And there was recently a horrendous incident in Kylie's Beach, it was called, Crowdy Bay in New South Wales, near the Port Macquarie region, where a bull shark sadly killed a young lady and critically injured her partner. So in terms of our dive profile, what we're going to do, we'll be taking in a fair bit of local knowledge and having a good think about how we go about it. Anyway, that's it for another episode of Out of the Blue. Stay tuned for Out of the Pan with Sally. And remember, batten down the hatches. Quite high winds, thunderstorms and all that stuff coming through the Sabo. So take care.
Listening to 3CR Community Radio.